This week on The Droids, we're talking about The High Republic, The Light of the Jedi, Chapter 19 to 23, casting news for Obi-Wan, and Kelly Marie Tran starring in the latest Disney princess film, Raya and the Last Dragon. All that and so much more on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. And finally, our hyperspace explorer has returned. Sam has been deep, lost in the hyperspace lanes. We thought he was gone forever, not to be retrieved, missed out on his entire fortune that he would make from exploring hyperspace and creating new pathways throughout the galaxy. But he is back, the original, the best there is. Sam, welcome back to the pod.
Murph, I was looking for you in the bookcase, Murph. I found you.
previous Sam, it's good to have you.
Yeah.
The answer was love all along. That's why I wore my Carhartt out in space. No, guys, I've really appreciated the time. You'll probably hear I sound a little different. I don't have my full record set up and I'm recording in the kitchen. Life with a little Grogu, you know, life with a Grogu in a small Brooklyn apartment. What can you say? You know, you make it work. So, but I finally got caught up on the reading. Guys, it's good to see you. It's good to be back.
Yeah. We're recording this. Yeah. We usually can't see each other, but today for the special occasion, we went on video. You guys can't, the listeners can't see us, but, Sam, I didn't know that the skin to skin thing went so far into the baby's life, but it's good to know the rest of you are also recording in the nude.
Also, it's interesting, Sam, you chose to wear the baby's bonnet, which I thought was fun detail.
Sam, of course, had a baby in the 1930s.
Yeah, exactly.
Threw a bonnet
Now he's chasing one of those wheels with a stick. Incredible.
You know, prams were something in the 1930s, but Baby Yoda brought them back. Prams are a thing again. So
that's true. Floating prams.
All right, well, let's get into it.
I've been working on getting something floating.
Right now, it's just a gently thrown pram.
Yeah. I'm going to get it to work.
It floats depending on how good the other person can catch.
Well, we've got a lot to cover with five meaty chapters of The High Republic, The Light of the Jedi. But let's talk very briefly about the casting news. It's a rumor for the Obi-Wan series. Indira Varma, who's also from Game of Thrones, Elara Sand, who led the Sand Snakes, her daughters, she will be joining the Obi-Wan series, at least supposedly. It's, you know, you never wait. You'd expect it once you actually see the show to see if they actually made it in. But they've been pretty accurate as of late. We pretty much knew everybody who was going to be in season two of The Mandalorian, with the exception of Mark Hamill. But I think I liked her in Game of Thrones. She's a pretty solid actress. I think she does have a spitting resemblance to Satine, Obi-Wan's long-lost love in the Clone Wars, and that would be interesting to see her in flashbacks. If that's the case, and Hayden Christensen is in this maybe more prominently than we would have initially thought, this is going to be a lot of flashbacks in the show, maybe like the Book of Boba Fett as well. We're going to get him out in the desert in Tatooine, maybe just sitting there and going over things all over again. The business at Catanoinia, which has came up in this week's edition of The High Republic. But I think there might be a lot more than we expected in terms of earlier timeline for Star Wars.
Listen, I'm glad that the Game of Thrones cast is getting work because, you know, there's a lot of talented people. But also, can we just put a moratorium on the Game of Thrones cast for like a year?
Do you think it has to do with like shooting location? Where are they shooting Obi-Wan at? Not Boston.
Not Boston. It is
It's just
Santa
one
Monica.
Of those things where it's like California. Everybody's from Game of Thrones.
Yeah. Well, do you think this has to do
used
with
to all the, be in Harry Potter?
We almost had
but they
the
were,
game.
They were all actors. Like they were all actors first, but it's like the Harry Potter movies. It was all the famous British actors ended up in Harry Potter. This is like all of the famous Game of Thrones
do you
movies
think they
end
all
up
got,
in every genre movie I see.
They all got tricked by when Benioff and Weiss were going to do the Star Wars series, and they're all like, "Yeah, we're in." And then they're like, "See you later."
Yeah, I mean, like it's a bunch of talented people. I take no issue, but it gets distracting.
Is that why you go back and watch the Last Crusade and you watch Empire Strikes Back and you see Veers, you're like, get that Grand Maester out of here. I don't want to see this Game of Thrones actor from 40 years ago.
That's exactly right. And I can't watch Alien 3 because Tywin Lannister is in it.
Yeah, you can't do that. Or Elf.
I've never seen Game of Thrones. Like, I read all the
books. Well documented on this podcast.
Yeah. You famously read all the books.
So, aside from
that person.
Aside from a couple of, like, the major like casting people that I'm aware of, like the girl who played Arya, you know, like she's blown up and I see her in everything now. But like, I don't know that I recognize all that many people. I think I'm aware they were in Game of Thrones, but I don't find it distracting because like I didn't spend 7 or 8 years watching them.
Fair enough. Yeah, we'll see. There'll probably be more in Star Wars.
So Sam, than you.
Is it true before you read all the books that you wrote down your casting of who you thought it would be and put it in an envelope, and then when you opened it, it was everyone they cast in the Game of Thrones TV series?
I'm still trying to chase down those casting directors for What Is Owed. Yeah, they haven't paid me a dime.
Uh-oh.
We lost Sam. Moving on.
It was a nice appearance. Appreciate you joining us, Sam. Oh, there he is.
There he is.
Don't worry, I kept recording and I answered the question, so it'll just be a mystery. You'll hear it on the episode.
I thought I got a little too close to the truth.
Sam, we're going to need you to speak up. I don't care what the repercussions are. You need to talk a little louder.
Oh, is that? Can you not hear me? Is that real?
I'm just going to need you to speak up, Sam.
Well, other news relevant to the day we're releasing this pod is Raya and the Last Dragon is getting some solid reviews as things start. I'm very excited
looks
to watch
awesome,
it.
Yeah.
Very nice profile of Kelly Marie Tran. Was that Vanity Fair?
It was Variety? Hollywood Reporter.
Hollywood Reporter, okay.
Yeah, it was a really good piece.
Yeah, really interesting.
Vanity Fair did a piece also, though, didn't they?
I think they both have a piece. Oh. But she talked about kind of her experience and kind of how she disconnected after everything that happened and allowed her to really feel like a much better life. We all should probably just get off of social media. We don't really need it. And she's set in the way, but I'm thrilled for her.
Give up your social media, give up your podcast, unsubscribe from everything.
Speaking of which, follow us on TikTok at DroidsPod. We're doing really well over there. Check it out.
Yeah.
But beyond that,
Mike, how's your dance routine coming?
Yeah,
I'm working on it. So it's really what I'm doing is Return of the Jedi. What do they call that dance number with in Jabba's palace? Doesn't have a specific number.
What do they call it?
There's a specific name to it, I believe. But I'm working on those moves. That's what
I think. Yeah, you got to have the lips that come straight in.
You know, I think we just have to do it. Let's just make that.
You know,
happen.
There was that Star idea. Wars dance game, which
yep.
cracks me up. We got to play that. Ryan, get that on the YouTube.
But with it, I'm very excited for Raya, and I just want Kelly Marie Tran to have all the best after everything that's happened to her, and I want this movie to be great, and I want her to continue to get more and more roles, which I think she will. She's you know, this may be this moment afterwards where she was, you know, in The Rise of Skywalker, wasn't the way it should be, but now she's starring, even though she's in an animated film. Mm-hmm. It seems like a really big moment for her.
I think I texted you guys. I'm predicting that we're going to see her in Rian Johnson's follow-up Benoit Blanc film. You know, they've talked a lot, like those are big ensemble movies, and it's like she could slot right in with an ensemble cast so well. And I think they got on really well. He clearly enjoyed working with her. And clearly, like, knows how to, you know, give actors something to do, unlike some Star Wars writer directors.
Guys, I just got an alert on Twitter. The Toxic Fandom announced that they believe that Raya and the Last Dragon is taking parts away from white male animated characters.
Oh, no.
And they're really upset about it.
Oh, no. And it doesn't portray Luke Skywalker the way it was intended.
Yeah, they were upset at the lack of Luke Skywalker at the end, and even more upset about how he's portrayed in his lack of appearance. They know that Kathleen Kennedy is behind this movie, and they're upset about it.
Hey, look, everyone should just be happy that the WandaVision finale had the Luke Skywalker moment we all expected. So at least we got
I was surprised. I said, I don't think they're going to pull it off. I don't know how, but they did it.
And all of a sudden, really did it. You hear on your left.
It is the multiverse. Well, let us move into the High Republic Light of the Jedi. Of course, we joke about it. Social media can be what it is, but there's also some fun stuff there. And you can follow us, DroidsPod, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. DroidsPod on TikTok, YouTube, Jedi Fallen Playthrough. You know the deal. DroidsPod@gmail.com. Let us know your thoughts on some of the recent news, as well as how you're doing on the High Republic Light of the Jedi, where you're at. So, five chapters to cover here, 19 through 23. We're into part two of the book, which is called The Paths. This is after we've been introduced to the Nihil, which we were mentioned on Facebook. A nice comment from Buddy, who said, really enjoying the episode, but he said the heads up that the Nihil is Latin, a word meant for nothing, and you pronounce it Nihil, which is very helpful. Thank you, Buddy. We want any pronunciation help. But Ryan was really close with the nihilist guess in the believing nothing, which we kind of find out a little bit more in these first few chapters. But let's start out with chapter 19. I really kind of loved this world that was created for this chapter. I like Chancellor Lena So, but the way she was talking about the mountain that remains in Coruscant, you know, reaching just above, that every generation has left it be as it was. They didn't disrupt that. The kind of you know, quest and pilgrimage to go there for some sort of reverence and mental focus as she's dealing with all of this and then all the advisors there. It really was a beautiful setting in my mind that was painted in this chapter. I really like that a lot.
It reminds me a lot. When we got into these chapters, I feel like the connection to the like the Clone Wars in the prequel era is really felt, you know. I mean, I know this is High Republic. I know this predates the prequels. I understand that, but like, it does feel like it's more touching that world than, you know, the original trilogy or sequel trilogy to me. Kind of in like the regality, and you see the, you know, the process of these, like, I don't know, what seems to be a galactic renaissance sort of, but yeah, I enjoyed the environment. I enjoyed the kind of world building of, like, the sort of history we got of Coruscant, Mike, that you're talking about, like kind of the idea that this city planet didn't just exist one day as a city planet, but was built to such. Yeah, I thought that was, I liked it. And I'm kind of curious, what was everybody's takes on Lena So? Like, I think she's an interesting character because I feel like they're already, I felt like they were kind of setting up someone who is very much regal and heart is in the right place, but perhaps, I don't know. I'm feeling like we're going to see her fall, or her, like, her dramatic flaw. What do they call it? Like, character flaw, you know, or something, and being overconfident or too demanding or something.
I get what you're saying, Sam. I think that you're right with more of, she's so curious about her legacy, wants the Starlight Beacon to be her legacy and all of that communication and
her
that
great works.
Yeah.
Right.
That likely failure that is on the horizon for her feels to me like it's more of, she's a leader trying to do the right things, trying to do it in the best way possible. And it's going to be all the more devastating when that all crumbles for her. And that's where we're going to get, you know, that kind of character arc for us, is it's not really going to work out. And the Republic may not, I guess, are we meant to say, I guess the High Republic probably is going to entirely fall at the end of the phase of these books? I'm not sure, but it seems like, because the Republic is, no, because it does.
I think that technically the still, fall of the High Republic is like the fall of the Republic.
It's just no longer, is the High Republic right now, because it's at its height and it's on its downward
turn. Yeah, it's like we know that. They can only call it that because we know the context. Otherwise, right, it would just be the Republic.
Yeah, right, which is like what they say in the book. Yeah.
We are all the Republic.
Now, Sam, I'm going to need you to repeat the question just really from the belly, man. Really. project. I agree with you that I think Lena So is probably, I think she has a tragic flaw that she's kind of single-minded in the in the Starlight Beacon and getting that up and running. And I think that you know, like anything, when you rush to get something like that done, when there's other things to consider, there's going to be infrastructure problems. Corners are getting cut somewhere.
Right. Yeah.
It doesn't come for free.
Yeah.
When you're pushing people that hard.
They're not supporting those walls. One of the guys is going to lean against the wall. His hand will be in outer space. You gotta be careful. I think it's interesting. Yeah, like you kind of said, she wants this monument. She might be a little too focused on the legacy or like the ideal of the Republic rather than the reality of what's going on in this world. So I think I'm interested to see. I think putting her in this new kind of... I never had this idea of Coruscant. I think you mentioned it before where it's like, yeah, it was a place that wasn't always a city, but like this idea that there is this kind of sacred mountain in Coruscant, which is kind of cool. Like I never would have imagined any kind of green space there.
Just from a design standpoint. Gardens,
yeah.
With the gardens at the base of the mountain meant to be, or base of the top of the mountain meant to be what it would be like at the base. Yeah. I hadn't thought of Coruscant in that way, but it is kind of this great drastic contrast to the rest of the planet, which makes it even cooler. I find it interesting, and maybe it's just because it seems sort of unrealistic in my mind now, just the way that politics work at the moment. Is there really anything that over the course of changes of regimes over thousands of years you would imagine would just stay the same? I mean, I guess you could say that, you know, with the recent changes in our politics that, you know, they don't mess with, we're going to tear down, the White House because we don't like it anymore. I mean, I guess that doesn't happen, but...
Look, man, Mount Rushmore has remained untouched as it was in the prairie lands of the, you know, of the Native American lands. It's untouched, you know, and that's sacred. We'd never do anything to that. Never, you know, we'd never sell any of the beautiful land for, you know, capitalistic gains or anything. There's certain things that are sacred for sure.
Do you think, because we don't see Coruscant later in any of the trilogies except for
Return of the Jedi,
very briefly in Force Awakens. Do you think that there is a Mount Rushmore type thing that has Palpatine's face on it? Addendum, is it his pre or post Mace Windu fight face? Like, how does he see himself?
His post Mace Windu face. It's post.
Oh, you think it's post?
He likes that. He likes his imposing face.
I mean, he kind of seems to choose for that to happen, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we don't have to get into it, but
yeah, he's like, well, I guess I can finally show my true form. So if he's going to let me do that, but again, all right. So with the rest of the advisors, those who come in, I think they do a nice job of establishing who each of these people are and really establishing who's the dick, Senator Moore, right?
He's got a tough job, man. He's overseeing. I think that.
Oh God, this guy. Defendant Senator Knorr again.
I think though his job is like, it's a cool time period. The idea that the Outer Rim really is like really out there. It's look, Ryan, I don't know if you're familiar with Star Wars. It's kind of a Western, and so the Outer Rim is kind of represents the Wild West, the westward expansion of American history. Of course, is what I'm referring to, and so, you know, Knorr is kind of the guy responsible for, you know, protecting Lewis and Clark on their journey, making sure those settlers, you know, have literal paths. That's what this is all about. And they just keep getting shut down because they don't know what happened. What happened in that hyperspace lane? You're like, the guy's got a reason to be upset. You know, he's being told he's got to get
Sam's voting records.
He needs to get that hyperspace lane open and get Starlight Beacon finished. But also, you can't have the highway to get there. What's he supposed to do with that? You tell me, Ryan.
Ryan, just to throw you down.
It's a bureaucratical nightmare.
When you said we saw Coruscant in the Force Awakens, the planets that it blew up were on the Hosnian system.
Yeah, Hosnian.
Hosnian system.
And fortunately, that was wasn't
that,
Coruscant.
So that was not supposed to be Coruscant?
No.
No. But we do see Coruscant. I said Hosnian with the
regional. It's humiliating, but you did say Hosnian system to... I know it was to make me feel better, and I appreciate
that. It's a regional dialect.
Yeah.
Well, Senator Knorr, we stick with him for a little bit and gets a little bit more of... I got to say, the more I learn about Elzer, man, he's one of my top Jedi. He's becoming one of my top Jedi. I love his entire approach. It's a little bit of a laissez-faire approach to the Force, and I'm good with that. And I like the way that he silences people who don't need to be speaking. You know, he could use the mind trick, but if he's just going to hold up to somebody's mouth and shut him down, why not? I got to say, I agree with most of his choices. I can't see a single flaw. I basically probably want to model my life after Elzer Man. Is that a good thing or a bad thing?
Hey, man, we'll in these out. Days, we'll you got to go with your bliss. I think you're just going.
He's got a very Qui-Gon element to him. Mm-hmm. He's a little bit renegade. He's a little bit reckless, which I like. I feel like they're setting him up for a turn. I feel like the whole experience at the end, like he is the Jedi who will go to the dark side. That's going to like fracture the order. That's my read on it. Cause like the way he uses the Force and the way he's been kind of stymied by the order for his like, you know, career advancement because he's a little unorthodox, and the fact that he takes such pride whenever his efforts are noticed and appreciated by Avar Chris. Avar by Avar Chris. You know, I feel like they're laying some groundwork. I don't know if it'll happen in this book, but I think they're setting him up for a significant departure. You know, whenever he's still stuck at the rank of knight after quite heroic, unorthodox deeds.
It's gonna break me, Sam. I didn't want to hear that.
I don't want you going up and just touching people's faces, okay? We're in a pandemic right now, okay?
Fair. Well, what else do we think? I mean, it's kind of, you got marching orders, it felt like, from this episode, or this chapter, I say episode, this chapter of where everybody's going, what their task is, what they need to do, how they're going to learn a little bit more from what was the Navidroids, is what they're going to take back to Tar on Hetzel. And Kevin. Having them work together, yeah, Tevin Tar, to get them and use thousands, tens of thousands of Nava droids to be able to figure out where the rest of everything's going, and maybe find essentially the legacy run black box, right? That's basically what they're looking for.
Yeah.
And it's great that they call them, you know, I love that they call them Nava droids, just so that you remember what kind of droid they are.
Right.
You don't need to worry about it. It's pretty clear. You know, if they're looking at transparisteel, it's glass. You know, if they're looking at Durasteel, it's steel. It's really clear. I appreciate the, you know,
they need to get clarity. A bunch of Navidroids to run Find My Legacy Run app. And then they'll do it.
Somewhere around 20,000 to 30,000, correct?
Yeah. Which is kind of funny. It's like, usually in Star Wars you don't see any limitations of the technology, and here now it's kind of like it's working against them a little bit. Like,
even then it seems a little silly though, because I'm like, you don't need to build the droids, you just need the processors.
Right. Yeah, right, yeah.
Just seems like a waste of Durasteel, if you know what I mean.
Right. We've been mining.
I just think
Bitcoin.
I don't know why they're not just calling AWS. I mean, I know the bill would be huge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's no server.
There's no server.
The bill
farm.
Would be huge and potentially like very, very inconsistent.
Yeah. Sheev's discount server farm. That's where they go.
Well, from there, we know the mission that comes out for Avar and Elzer, our buddy, where they're headed. And they're heading to a name that's familiar to us, not one that is familiar more than a brief moment. But in The Force Awakens, Lor San Tekka is the one who hands off the map to Luke Skywalker to Poe Dameron. And it seems like his ancestors are the ones here in the High Republic, the San Tekka clan. These are the prospectors, the explorers, you know, Sam's good old buddies out there in hyperspace that made a fortune off creating these hyperspace lanes. You know, I think that's kind of a cool thing that they did it that way, but we'll get to the San Tekkas a little bit later. Ryan, chapter 21, No Space. I feel like you've got some thoughts on the Nihil.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Yeah.
It's not meant to put you on the spot. I just figured you might enjoy
that
chapter.
Yeah, sorry. I didn't know that there'd be a oral exam. No, I mean, I think that the world building they do, you have a better sense. This is when they're like all in their big ship, right?
Well, this is when they're on their no space, like,
this
existence.
Is right.
It's
okay,
like a grand
hall. I'm just
this is the scene from Star Trek.
Orienting myself. It's a scene from Star Trek. If you've ever heard of that kind of thing. But I think the world building is great. I love a fake kind of pseudo-religious cultural hierarchy in a genre picture. So the fact that they have like, what is it called? Like, it's the storm.
Yeah. Strikes.
Yeah. The strikes. And the cloud. Yeah. The storm cloud strikes. And then there's like the eye that they all are operating under that is also just kind of like someone who inherited the role through right. like kind of a bureaucratic system that only yep. like four or five of the other Nihil acknowledge, where they're just like, listen, like, and within the book, they kind of say like, he doesn't really have that much power. He just kind mm-hmm. of has the illusion of power.
Right.
Or he has the knowledge that he was given that gives him some advantage.
He just knows.
But
he
really
just knows.
Yeah, he's just kind of separate from the Nihil, where he's like, they're going to do what they're going to do.
But he
has sort of like Littlefinger.
Right.
He's kind of like the, like, he's in essence the purse strings. Obviously, mm-hmm. he's trading in information, right? And he has exclusive information to the paths.
He has the collateral of, if you kill me, then you don't know where these things are.
Yeah, yeah. His specialization separates them from the other marauders out there in the wasteland.
Marauders, yeah.
Anyone else want to hazard? Thing about the how the ship just has a barrier that's like pretty much invisible, and it's a metaphor for how they're just basically all out there in space, and there's nothing separating them from oblivion. And then when they need to, they just throw people out.
I picture just like tons of metal just like swarming around and platforms that they're just kind of like hang out on.
Yeah. And everything's like twisted and ugly, and it's obviously the Reavers from Firefly.
Or just Star. Yeah. What's the JJ Star Trek movie? That's like I thought of their ship.
It's Romulans.
I couldn't remember.
Anyone else want to hazard a guess at how you pronounce his name? I'm sure it's already out there on StarWars.com, but Martian Rowe. Yeah, probably.
I thought it was interesting they named a Star Wars character Martian. That just feels.
There's only so many letters. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Martian Rowe. Oh, also, Mike, you said that Lore Vanteca was in the Force Awakens. I'm sorry, he was in the Hossian system, and that was destroyed.
For me, this is where like these chapters actually really started to drag for me, and I think I'm eager to see where they take these villains, because like Ryan, when you're talking about kind of the world and culture building that they do with the storms, clouds, and strikes, I do appreciate that, and that's, I feel like normally that is stuff that I really kind of enjoy and buy into, and for whatever reason. Maybe it's kind of the strength of part one of this book being so like dynamic and action filled, and there being the Jedi are there to face a crisis that's not immediately a villain, but it's like a coming together to save people in the face of like a catastrophe, that like by the time they introduce these people as the villains, like I found myself really bored with these guys mm-hmm. and really disinterested, and they just didn't carry the weight of any like kind of Star Wars villains I've encountered before. I also just read Shadows of the Empire, and like Prince Xizor is like an awesome character and villain, you know? And so I don't know. I was kind of underwhelmed, and I'm curious to see if later chapters develop them more. For me.
This runs into a similar problem that a lot of things with like a killer first act do, aside from that it can't like live up to the promise, which we don't know yet, but it's like it has this huge extended sequence that essentially happens in somewhat real time that gets into the minutia of everything that they're doing that's like very engaging, and then they kind of need to get the story going mm-hmm. and like explain everything that was a mystery before, so you lose a little bit of that thrill of like I don't know what's going on, because you're getting to the point where they're like, we need to tell you what's going on.
Well, that's
always a little less exciting than not quite knowing.
This is interesting, because I felt this is more about the five chapters as a whole, right? Rather than any one of them. But the setup and kind of arc of these five chapters is setting up the mystery that the Jedi are trying to solve. What happened? Which makes me really question whether, I don't know if it was the first chapter or a prologue, but where you're on the legacy
run.
The legacy run. And you see, okay, there's an obstacle and it tore itself apart when the captain tried to, you know, maneuver. And I think, like, why didn't we just open on the next chapter with, like, debris flying and the Jedi discovering that there were people aboard and then going, what happened? And then because then the reader is part of the mystery. But, like, there's so much of these chapters where we're with Jedi asking people questions, going, like, what happened? We don't know why the ship broke up. And it's literally people being like, nothing could be in the hyperlanes. But it's like, we already know there was something in the hyperlane. And so now it's just like spinning its wheels. It's wasting my time. Like,
see, I don't agree with that. Because I actually feel like I like the way that it started, and I like the way that they left the mystery of what is that thing in the hyperspace lane. And I'm excited about now we have this mystery of the, jumping ahead a little bit, the Santeca group and how they're lying and not telling what's going on. I actually felt like this continued to deepen the mystery when the Nihils weren't the ones who did it. Like, when I found out that it seemed like they're just doing their own thing, like, oh yeah, Ad Dallas, we were the ones who took down those six ships, but actually I thought it was going to come to, oh yeah, we put the thing in the hyperspace lane. This is going according to plan. We're the full villains. There's a bigger villain that we're going to be introduced to. And so that mystery to me kept me going through these chapters thinking that there was going to be more that was revealed here, and feels like there's a larger mystery that we're going to continue to explore, which I'm excited about. So I'm not saying you're wrong, Sam. I'm just saying that was the way I read it.
Interesting.
I often wonder with this chapter, do you think every word was just read with an incorrect word in the Word document?
Oh, for sure.
Just all these names. It was very, yeah. It was like at some points they're just working against themselves. It's just
can
like,
you like can
Zagyar
you just like,
said no to Martian Row like that.
Do you just like very, pay an intern to like add stuff to your Word dictionary?
Yeah,
just exactly. Be like, I need you to add the following words.
Put all these in.
Add them all in safe, and then I'm going to type up the chapter.
A kid named Blit? Come on. Blit. But then we got to see how kind of cruel they are too in this chapter when they're like, oh wait, it wasn't a successful mission, we lost one, whose fault was
someone's
that?
Someone's gotta go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which didn't we didn't find out if that was Zagyar. You know, they built him up a little bit as like, yeah, this guy's got potential. Martian Rose thinking this is a pretty strong member of what, the Storm?
We'll find out if he's floating by someone's
storm,
ship
also
later.
The Storm, do we think that's related to Stormtroopers later down the road?
Wow.
Mm. No.
Didn't even cross my mind.
Yeah.
No,
I mean, like, maybe the Storm wins out in this battle and they were so notorious and that's why they're Stormtroopers.
I do like that idea. Could be.
Possibility. I mean, I do think this chapter does a nice job of giving you the foreboding of what we then experience with the family on Elf Rana. And that the reputation of the Nihil is what it is, that their fear feels a little bit more real, and the lack of support from, what was it, Ogden Place nearby, that they weren't getting any help from, and that they wouldn't want to. It set it up well as like they have a reputation, and this is why the outpost wouldn't come help them. They don't even want to be identified when they reach out to the Jedi. And I like that, and I liked how I'm kind of like reading through this, and it's like, all right, I know what's coming, not necessarily how it's going to play out, but I know that the Jedi, as our good buddy here in Bell, and Loudon, are both having a good time messing around with falling off cliffs, that they've got some work to do on the horizon. And I kind of, I liked basking in that world of just breakfast and what was it, nine egg stew or whatever it was. And it just kind of, that was fun to me. That felt, I guess, it didn't feel Western-like to me. It honestly kind of felt like...
Star Wars is, after all, Western.
Well, yeah. It kind of felt like, you know, like a college movie or an academy or even Harry Potter and Hogwarts. You know, I know it's only like four of them, but just everybody's hanging out in bunk beds being Jedi.
See, that's like so fascinating. That, like... I love how differently like how different our experiences are reading this book, Mike, because like that was the part that I feel perhaps more than any felt like a Western. I was like, oh, these are the guys camping out around the campfire.
Yeah, fair.
You know, as again, literal like cowboys out off the grid, and they're looking for ways to pass the time, and it's almost like the scene where the older cowboy, you know, teaches the young guy to shoot bottles, right? Except it's Jedi, you know, pushing off a cliff. But I love your read of it too, because that exists. There's definitely a camaraderie. There's definitely a collegiate feel. And Bell is such a great person, like a set of eyes to see this through, because he's the young guy. He's the new guy. He's who we would be. You know, he's the Padawan. That's who we would be if we were there.
And to me, this reminded me of, and in many ways, Star Wars always has been a firefighter movie.
Is this backdraft in space? Yeah, right, is that what you're trying
because
to say?
It's like you got the new recruit and they're kind of like hanging out waiting for the alarm to go off. Other, you know, they're busting each other's chops, they're having a good time. There's the older chief played by that guy who plays the father in the fighter and only can play a police or a fire chief and something. And you know, they're eating stuff and then the alarm goes off and they go, "All right, kid, it's time to go." So in many ways, Star Wars has always been a firefighter story.
I think what's interesting also is the one Jedi that's just making sound effects the whole time. He's my favorite one. He's making the alarm sounds. He's making the lightsaber sounds.
Yeah. The Steve Guttenberg Jedi.
He's great.
We are now fully talking about Police Academy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's not a firefighter.
Mike referenced it earlier.
Yeah. What other Academy movies are there, right? Yeah. I mean, is there much? Yeah. I guess, is School Ties an Academy movie?
I suppose so. The Dead Poets Society.
Yeah. What's that movie where the Russians take over a school with Sean Astin?
Red Dawn?
Red Dawn?
No.
No, it's not. It's not Red Dawn. It's a much less famous movie. It's like Toy Soldiers. Rudy.
I thought you were talking about Rudy, because as you know, John Favreau's in that.
And that's an Academy. Notre Dame is definitely an Academy.
So we're not talking about Small Soldiers with Gregory Smith, right?
No. Are you thinking of that movie Toys with Robin Williams?
Fiona Apple song.
Are we talking about The Toy with Richard Pryor?
Let's keep it going.
Toy Story.
Star Wars has always kind of been a toy story. You know what I mean?
Really is.
It's kind of always been a toy commercial. You know what I mean?
The way that they set up this family, though, on this planet, you know, the Nihil thought they were like, oh, this is a very wealthy family. We can really hold them for ransom. The way they described them, they did not seem nearly as wealthy. I mean, I know they came from the mid-rim and then, you know, made their way out, but
family shouldn't
know.
I think these guys, I think they're living pretty rough if they're like, oh, they've got some eggs. These guys must be great.
I thought this family, and I was confused, I thought this family were also Santecas, which I realized is not accurate, but I thought they were like another branch of the Santeca family. It was like they had amassed wealth, they were mid-rim family, but then they went out and sort of more in search of their roots, like we're frontiersmen, you know, and so I thought, oh, they're going after the Santecas, the Nihil are after the Santecas, this is all tying together. And then I don't remember if we got the family's last name, but I'm not sure that that's true anymore.
I think they're just kind of like, you know, there's like a documentary about older people who like retire to like rural Mexico. And they're just like, we made our money and now we're going to make it go like really far where we can.
They all go to Marfa.
Yeah, they go to Marfa, Texas.
Was the Palpatines. Whoa. No, I was kidding.
So I think it was like they just kind of like made their money and were like, we'll just kind of like live off of it. We don't have to quote unquote work anymore. Although, you know, I mean, they tend into the soil is
they,
work.
I mean, they must've been pretty rich. They had a panic room.
Yeah. They did have a panic room.
Pretty solid one. It seems like.
Now there's a movie.
We end this chapter though, as you were talking about, Sam, our classic, chief figure. I like how we have no indication of like his previous deeds, even though they talk about, you know, did all the stages of being a Jedi. But I like they're like, oh, you know, he's not only great at making nine egg stew. Instead, we finally saw the Jedi they once called the Blade of Bardotta.
Then you know you're in it.
That's pretty awesome. Yeah.
Especially since it's like the first mention of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, now he's the Blade of Bardotta. Before he was just making gross eggs.
Yeah, before he was the egg guy.
Yeah, before the only blade he was using was cutting tip nip, and now he's
the eventual Disney Plus series is going to have very much a Kill Bill scene where someone seeks him out and they're like, I'm here for the nine egg stew, but then they have a very 25 minute long conversation about stew before he takes him up to see the Blade of Bardotta, right?
Yeah.
That's how this plays out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
It's the book of the Blade of Bardotta, a Star Wars story, exclusively on Disney Plus.
And Luke's in it, guys. And Luke. Luke.
Make Solo 2 happen.
Every title just says Luke. We end up our five chapters here with Avar, Chris, and Elzer making their way to Naboo. Chris, I basically thought of you this whole time because it seemed like they were in the same spot you were in Italy, that's basically where this took place.
I was envisioning it as well. Maybe I left them some tips when I was there. I kind of
and some yips.
Some tips. Some
you
yips.
Send them an email with places to go to eat and stuff.
Now, Ryan, I know you probably think Naboo is in The Force Awakens, but it's not in the Hossian system. No, I think it's a cool callback. I don't think Naboo gets a lot of love for as interesting as it looks in Star Wars. I'm happy.
And we all know who's from Naboo. Sheev.
That is true.
She's from Naboo.
Here we are.
Wow. Oh,
so if they run into a little boy and they're like, what's your name? And he's like, I'm Sheev.
And he's like, let me tell you something, Sheev.
The only way the Santeca clan got anywhere was by manipulating the government.
Star Wars, it's interesting because I was just reading the other day an interview with J.J. Abrams, and he was saying something really interesting, which is like Star Wars, you know, the Skywalker saga in particular has always been, you know, really about two families, the Palpatines and the Santecas. And so it's really, I do think this is setting us up really nicely.
It is interesting, though, that the Santeca in The Force Awakens was dealing with like Navi coordinates, though. Like the thing that
he had half good a point. Map.
So there is some kind of cool like they were like map makers,
cartographers.
Cartographers. Star Wars has really always been about maps.
But
good catch, Chris.
Yeah,
that was good, Chris.
Just develop that
I'm
right now.
Shocked, Chris.
And perhaps he's trying to, you know, it sounds like the Santecas may be into some bad stuff. Maybe more Santecas trying to set it right, you know?
Right.
Yeah. Because they may have been exiled as a family. Who knows?
Yeah.
But clearly the Sydow in that movie was like 1,000. So
it's very old.
But the Santecas would maybe know the Palpatines, but also know Amidala's family. Mm-hmm. You would think those families would all be connected on Naboo.
I did really like the depiction of these two Santeca family, like the two husbands who are meeting with the Jedi, like they strike that perfect balance of like genuine and helpful and like effortlessly like charming but also smarmy and like clearly like they're only helpful to a point, you know, like I don't get the sense that they're like actively, I mean they're obviously hiding something, but I think in their mind it's like, well, we needn't share anything that would, you know, soil the family name. It's not like they're like part of scheming or anything, you know.
They have a good way of depicting them as like not being nefarious. They just kind of like keep their own counsel.
Sure.
Where it's like, we'll like decide what people need to know about our business, but like, you know, we're not impeding anything. It's just that like, are, of course, the Santecas. And Star Wars has always been a Santeca story.
No, they Ryan, you said right there is exactly like that was they keep their own counsel and it's the power of privilege. It's the idea of like knowing they're a powerful family and therefore they can decide for these Jedi what they need to know. Mm-hmm. It's that's great.
I gotta say though, again, my man Elzer just dipping into the fine liqueurs, getting into anything without really needing to ask. I like it. I like the style.
He's looking for a good digestif.
I like the one description that says some green stuff in a stemless glass bowl. Some green stuff.
I love how Elzar is like down. He's like a couple drinks. I can use the force.
Right. Yeah.
It's no problem.
And we get a little hint with Avar and Elzar. Like she says she wants to be there with him or something, and then
this seems like there's a little bit of love there.
I can see it. The Zars and the Avars. The Elzar and their names are very, very similar. The invitations would look nice.
The invitations would look nice. Yeah.
Can anyone else tell Chris is making invitations?
They can make a good portmanteau out of their name.
Right, Exactly.
Can I ask, are we going to get some of this green liquid from Oh boy, we should never go on camera.
Are we
going to
get like when we eventually really go to Galaxy's Edge?
I can't look.
I'm saying,
at
can
you.
We go to Galaxy's Edge and get a Nubuian green liqueur that my buddy Elzar loves?
I hope so.
I hope so. I hope.
I always, you know, that I'm crazy about a green liqueur in any form.
I hope if I'm drinking it, I hope it's something you can drink. Green stuff from a glass.
They call it, I don't know. I got it from the store. They call it antifreeze. What kind of name? kind of name is that for a drink?
I got to bring it back to next week's podcast. There is something at the new Galaxy's Edge trading post that I guess is in Disney Springs, not actually in Galaxy's Edge. Okay. It's called like Poppy's something, and it's a it looks like a green bottle of some kind.
Oh.
And I don't know what it is because I've never heard of whatever this thing is.
Yeah, what is it?
It's a Star Wars drink called Poppy's something.
I think so. I don't know. I'm not sure
you should be talking to Poppy.
I'm going on eBay right now. I'm going on eBay right now. Here we go. 12 gallons.
Is it just
$700? $700. That's a good deal.
I bought a Sparklets bottle worth of it.
Is it just Surge?
I'll find it and I'll show it to you guys. And
it's Galaxy's Edge, but they only serve Surge.
Mike,
Poppy juice.
You're mentioning Galaxy's Edge. What's that?
This thing that I one day thought I could go to.
It's past mid-ridge rim. What? We're recording too late.
At this point, I think giving it a go on the outer rim seems okay. Whatever.
You know what?
Well, this chapter, we've kind of already talked about it. It ends with after Elzar says that they are lying, they don't call them out on it. Then we get a little bit of time between the Santecas where it's pretty clear, you know, that they are pulling one over on the Jedi. But we kind of just get set up there for more from them because we know we're going to spend more time with them going forward.
It's a classic, like they seem scared where they're like, I hope it's not her.
Yeah, exactly.
Now, full disclosure, because I was trying to catch up and I read a little ahead. I don't know if anybody else has read a little bit ahead, but if not,
no,
I'd love
I made
to,
that mistake I, once.
I will
I got
not
raked over the coals for it.
Yeah,
I'm not gonna weigh in, but I'm curious if anybody has predictions.
Oh,
for anything.
What's the market gonna do tomorrow?
What?
I said, yeah, what's the market going to do tomorrow? No.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's not going to be good. It's not going to be good. I think that there's probably going to be more information revealed, but not all the information. And then we'll be wondering, where's the new information?
I got it, guys. I got it.
Yeah.
It's called the Patty Frog Sipper.
Right, okay.
And what is that? I've never heard of that.
Well, they had all those
old
Kermit Muppets. They had to destroy the Muppets section at Disney. So they
Kermit had those tweets they found out about, so they had to
That's it.
But somebody email us. What is Patty Frog Sipper? What does that have to do with Star Wars? I've never heard of
that. Do you think it was like before it was like a Cara Dune cooler?
They changed it to a Patty Frog Sipper.
In a pinch, they were like, call it something.
I don't know. I don't care. Hey, you, what do you say? He's like, what?
Sam, I don't really have a good prediction other than probably what we already talked about is that they're not really nefarious. They're not really, I think, as you said, maybe holding family trade secrets. But I think it's one of those things where it's like, we made hyperspace work by overlooking this fatal flaw that we don't want anybody to find out about. That's kind of my thought.
A Clatooine Patty Frog was one of Jabba the Hutt's favorite snacks. It's like that bug thing
he eats after the twilight goes down.
Not really a prediction, Chris, but okay.
Predict. Oh, let me Google this. Oh my gosh.
Thank you, Chris. I guess that clears
so
that
they
up.
So they made a refreshment out of possibly the grossest moment in Star Wars.
I'll tell you what, when it's 110 degrees and you've been sweating for eight hours.
Honestly, it's just the juice that thing sits in.
I think we're going to see some inner politicking with the Santeca. I think we're going to discover that this High Republic is kind of built on stilts, and people that have lots of money are kind of controlling things unbeknownst to the Jedi. Jedi seem real bad at knowing when they're being lied to in like a greater sense. Like they can pick out little lies, but they never assume like the worst of people. And so I think sometimes they get a fast one pulled over. They get a little Sheev trick on them.
So you anticipate a Sheev trick before the main Sheev trick, as in somebody else sets that course and then Sheev picks the ball up and runs with it in the prequels.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
You know that Gullible is right next to Jedi in the dictionary, right?
You look up the word. Let me take a look. Oh!
Ryan, what did you just look up?
I just found that they're selling Cara Dune spelled D-O-O-N, Cara Dune coolers on the dailywire.com now, I guess. So I guess that's where they went. They sold them all to Shapiro's outfit.
Oh, nice.
Well, guys,
man, she really showed us, huh? She really showed all of us. She showed all these people that were like, "Man, you're ignorant and spreading hate and misinformation." She showed all us. She got into business with Ben Shapiro. Disney's shaking in their boots. Wowie, wow! What a win for the Dune.
On that note, I think we've reached the end of our podcast. We'll continue with more High Republic, Light of the Jedi. I think overall, you know, we're moving the story a little bit forward. As you said, I do agree with you, Sam. Some of this is filling a little bit of time, filling things in that we didn't have in Act One. But I am excited about where we're going. Sam, you seem surprised that I'm agreeing with you.
I'm laughing because my heat just kicked on and there's a loud whistle that I'm trying to counteract.
Oh, perfect time. Perfect time.
But Mike, I am I'm shocked. I you know, look, the buttoned up boys don't agree on much other than wardrobe. So
after absolute beating that you gave him before, like, I'm so glad that Sam's baby was asleep. She didn't have to witness that happen to her father.
Oh, man. Well, good to have you back, Sam. Good to get another chance for all four of us to be here to talk about Star Wars. And we'll be back with more because I'm sure, you know, there's got to be more breaking news for Star Wars next week, right? Every week. Maybe we'll have new casting rumors to eat up a full show, I would think. But we'll continue on with this book. Yeah, we can. Probably we can break a lot of news on this show.
Exactly.
It's great to be back.
That will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. Catch us back here next week for more of the best Star Wars talk in the galaxy.
What they throw? Annie? Depends Merv. On how...
It's good to be back, Merv.
I gotta go find
Anne Hathaway. All right, I'm gonna go find Anne.
I don't think Patty Frog should be a drink. It should be the Patty Frog Melt, and it's like a frog that's melted between two pieces of bread.
Oh, y'all never had a Patty Frog sipper?